It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Rock and roll. We're back, and we're glad to be here. A lot of good stuff to talk about, so we're going to get right to it. Scott's got a stack of stuff over there.
Indeed, I do.
So roll it, Lisa.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor
and David Holland. You know, he gets all this promo. I don't know.
I am just a radio personality.
But you are just. We need to change that. You are just. No, you're not just a radio personality. You got a million other things, I'm sure, that we could put on there for you. But we've got some work to do. We're evolving, ladies and gentlemen. So we've got to update some of our information you hear. Anyway, let's go, Scott. What do you got for us?
Market still not overly exciting from the standpoint.
Yeah, but you got some good news.
Volatility, but the Dow broke 13,000.
Very nice.
Yep, so that was nice news. Up 24 points on the Dow, up about 4.5 points on the S&P. NASDAQ up about 20 points on some strength from Apple, which I'll tell you a little bit about again. Oil off another $1.90, back down to 106. Wouldn't that be terrific if we can get that inside of 100 by the end of the week? Maybe.
I'd be happy about that. But hold on, wait. We'll just take the refineries offline.
Yeah, but we have the strategic reserve, so it's all fine. Gold up 12. So, a pretty flat day overall, but psychologically, nice to see that Dow back above 13,000. Only another 1,200 points or so to get us back to the high.
Where was the max? 14,000 what?
14, I'm going to say 278, but I'm just guessing okay. On that. It was low 14.
But it was low 14,000s.
Yeah, so but we're getting there. We're going in the right direction. Apple shares topped $530, another all-time high. They sent out invitations to a mystery get-together for March 7th, which is really no mystery. They're going to launch the iPad 3.
Very good. I still have the 1.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You have to crank that up? Or
yeah, well, it's got a handle on the front of it, like the old Ford Model T. You got to turn it, and it starts. But, you know, I don't even see it anymore. The wife and the kids have it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it was mine. I think my parents gave it to me for my birthday or Christmas. But, you know, I'm, like, fighting for it, and they're all on there. You know?
In response to the iPad 3 coming out, Best Buy lowered their price on the iPad 2 by $50. So
if I get it, I'm not telling anybody.
Yeah, just keep it in the car. On the economic front, a fair amount of news. Durable goods orders slumped 4% in January. That's the biggest slide for them in almost 3 years.
What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, we've had some pretty strong
fourth quarter.
We've had some hot numbers there, so there's going to be some slowing down. So to me, it was not an overly unexpected number. Home prices, the Case-Shiller home price index came out as well. The prices slid another 3.8%. Ending 2011 at the lowest level since mid-2006. Back to 2006 levels.
That sounds good to me. And consumer confidence is up to a one-year high.
Yep, consumer confidence. This is a different number than we normally look at on Fridays. The Friday number that we get over and over and over is the University of Michigan consumer sentiment number. This one is from the Conference Board, which is a private think tank, if you will. Consumer confidence jumped to a one-year high in February up to 70.8. It's a diffusion index. From an upwardly revised 61.5 the previous month. Most of that strength coming on people's thoughts that there are more jobs out there.
Well, there is a report out. Let's see who put it out. Bloomberg was reporting it that payrolls. Oh, this was a expectation for U.S. business from U.S. business economists, and it came from the National Association for Business Economics.
Yes,
in Washington, and they.
That's
they
a said, different group than the conference board, but it's
right.
A,
so they're saying, hey, things
story.
Are looking better. We're looking at maybe 170,000 new jobs in 2012 a month. And
still too slow.
Yeah, still too slow. And they're saying, well, you know, we might get down to 8% by the end of the year, and then next year maybe we'll get down to 7.8. It's just going to take forever at that rate.
Yeah, and still looking at GDP growth, the same study that you're referencing, GDP growth of 2.4%, which is still, I mean, it's not anemic, but it's not robust.
No, it's not contraction, but it is still not enough. And inflation, you know, ironically, inflation's, you know, still hovering around the same. So, I don't know if there's a lot of excitement there. Volatility? Are we going to see volatility start to go up? Because it's been pretty quiet.
Well, let me just put a little bit of context around those economic numbers. Let's keep in mind that a year ago, we were looking at initial jobless claims running around 400,000 per week, right? So pretty high number there. They're about three and change today, 350. People who saw jobs as very hard to get, which is a sub-index in the study mm-hmm. that we looked at, had fallen all the way to 38.7. It's significantly higher than that. So, you know, we just need more strength in momentum. We have the direction, just not quite the oomph behind it.
We just need mo.
We need mo, indeed.
Okay. All right. Well, we will have more for you right after this quick break. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
I'm telling you, the VIX is fake. That's vapor rub, okay? Well, the VIX, we're talking about the VIX, which is defined for our audience what in the world the VIX is.
The VIX is an index that all it does is measure the volatility of options prices. Now, it used to measure just put prices. Now it measures put and call
prices.
So
it's a way to measure how much the market is swinging up and down.
Yeah, because options are significantly more volatile than stocks. So it's almost like volatility on steroids.
And some people are saying, hey, you know, the volatility looks like it could heat up, or what do you do? And some other, and there's also thoughts out there, well, we've had a nice run so far this year for the market.
Yeah.
So the question then, of course, people start asking is, well, what do you do about that? How do I, the Dow's at 13,000, how do I lock in my gains? But protect myself, but also not to pay taxes because they're short-term games. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, I think my biggest response to that is that you can't react to day-to-day stuff, but you do have to check your asset allocation. And if a market movement to the upside or the downside gets your allocation out of whack, then, you know, get it back in whack.
You need to check yourself where you wreck yourself.
That's right.
Because asset allocation can be bad for your health.
Anytime the market sort of disjoints, like what we saw in 2008, people come up with these new theories, these trend following theories, and all kinds of nonsense. The truth of the matter is that over the last 100 years, asset allocation works. It protects against risk and allows you to participate. So
Sure
your allocation.
Yeah, asset allocation is good for your health. It's the short term trading that's bad for your health.
That's right.
And you know, it's pure nonsense, some of what these traders and folks talk about, because for the regular person, you need to buy and hold on to your stuff. Now, you might make changes along the way, and you might out reallocate and you might do these things, but you need to not be trying to get in and get out of the market and time the market and all this fancy puts, barbells, straddles, all this stuff that are for traders.
Yeah, huge difference between a trader and an investor.
It's not what we do. It's not what we recommend people do.
It certainly is not what retirees and pre-retirees should do.
No, sir. And it's not the way you should be looking at your investment money. If you've got money in the market, it's there to do two things: accumulate for the future and to protect you from inflation. It is not there to be a short-term park strategy So don't worry about the fact, be happy that the market's up, and don't worry about, hey, how do I lock in, protect my gains? Now, if you have too much in the market, that's another discussion. Then the money shouldn't be there, period. Not how do you keep it there and protect it. It just needs to be moved out into something more conservative, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right.
When we see big risk profile problems, we correct them as fast as possible.
Well, speaking of big risk profile problems, let's talk about Germany and what's going on with Greece.
Yeah, German politics, believe it or not, are actually really pretty interesting to watch right now.
Are they any different than what we do over here?
Well,
except there's just more. They have more people in there.
They're achieving some stuff. Let's put it that way. The so-called lower house in Germany approved the Greek aid package, but it was a little bit of a scandal because there wasn't as much of a referendum or as much of a pure majority as Chancellor Merkel would have liked to have had.
So more dissenters.
Yeah, it's showing some dissension there. And then also the High Court in Germany said that they were going to limit the powers of a special parliamentary panel that basically said you guys can't just do whatever you want to help out the rest of Europe.
Yeah, it's got to be an emergency. You can't take these authorities and then do whatever you want to do with them.
Yeah, okay. So excited, but it is.
But it looks like it's going to go through.
It looks like it's going to go through without much trouble at this point. Although we've had a lot of trouble up to this point, but it does show that appetite for bailing out countries in Germany is waning.
And the language that I read the same article you did from, I think it was Bloomberg, basically said, look, the lot of the discussion said the German appetite for more bailout is really low after this one.
Yeah, and it's rightfully so.
Yeah, I mean, good grief. All right. Let me see what else I got over here.
We're going to talk about the nuns.
I'm going to get to the nuns in just a second, but I saw this and I wanted to mention this. This is another staggering number. We talked yesterday on the show about how much Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, how many mortgages they hold. Well, because they hold so many, guess what? They are also one of the big foreclosers, the folks that exercise the foreclosure on the property owner. And so the government, that means that the government holds, listen to this, the government owns, has control over 250,000 foreclosed homes owned by Fannie Mae. How about that?
Do you think those are probably well managed?
They are just pristine properties. So they're going to start moving some of those properties, trying to now sell them or rent them or do something. So not only is the government, our government, the safety net, so to speak, but they also now are the landlord.
Here's an idea. We could bundle them and sell them as a package.
That's
with the
genius.
AAA backing of the government.
That's genius.
Hot dog.
What do you call those? Mortgage-backed securities?
You call that 2008.
Yes, exactly what it called. All right. Well, we're going to call it a quick break. We come back, you're going to hear about Scott's nuns. Stay tuned.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Okay, we're back. This next one's just amazing. Listen to this. Scott mentioned nuns. Yeah, there's a story talk about playing with fire. There is a story about a scammer who has been arrested for scamming nuns by the FBI.
Elderly nuns.
God bless. So this guy, Adriano Sotomayor. Adriano, 54, of New Jersey, has been charged with 13 counts of wire fraud and accused of scamming the Dominican Sisters of the Rosary of Fatima, an order in Puerto Rico and Philadelphia, the FBI said Monday. So he was managing, their portfolio, and he scammed out like over $400,000. If he's found guilty, he faces a maximum sentence of 260 years in jail and a $3 million fine.
Yeah, you know, this is not an uncommon type of scam, though. He pretended he was a priest and went to the nuns and said, I'm representing the estate of one of my parishioners who's passed away, and he's named you as the beneficiaries of the estate, and you're going to get a couple million dollars out of this, but there's a lot of expenses involved. So in order for me to process this thing, I need you to give me some money, and I got to leave town. I'm going to be in Atlantic City, so I need you to wire it to me at the Trump Plaza in Atlantic City. But once I get all this money so I can get the estate processed, then you'll get your $2.1 million. It's no different than these scams you hear about in the parking lot where somebody comes running up to you and they say, I got the winning lottery ticket, but I need 50 bucks to get my kid out of jail or whatever. It's not an uncommon scam, but this is a pretty extreme instance.
You know, I think for somebody like this, he better hope he lives 260 years to serve out that sentence, because I think that the next sentence is not going to be so good.
Yeah, there's nowhere happy for him to go.
It's going to be hot, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's going to be hot. Another scammer. You want to talk about the comptroller?
Yeah, this one's, you know, here's your campaign finance reform in action.
Yeah, this guy, this is the comptroller of
New York City,
and it's not him, it's campaign treasurer. But this guy had a legitimate shot at running for mayor in this next go around. So this is not a two-bit politician.
So he didn't know anything about it.
Well, I didn't say
Hold
that.
Hold on, you ready? I never told anybody to lie. I never said to go out and do that.
I didn't say that. His treasurer, who was a 25-year-old woman, interesting that it was a 25-year-old person, was basically processing fake donations to the campaign.
And the campaign, I guess the way the campaign laws work there in New York City is that there's matching public dollars. And so by dumbing up or making these contributions the way they were doing them, basically it got more money into his campaign from taxpayer dollars. So I would call that theft.
Yeah, and it's not the first problem for this particular campaign. His had another fundraiser, was arrested back in November and indicted earlier this month. So it looks like there are big problems for Comptroller Lou in New York City.
Well, he's a popular Democrat from Flushing, Queens, and he had a hard time answering questions from the New York Times about this issue. And this is really interesting. The FBI, I'm not going to try to pronounce her last name, but the FBI agent director from New York office said that basically the intent of the city's campaign finance laws was in part to limit the influence of wealthy contributors on a political campaign. And she goes on to say, in a very real sense, this guy's name is Hu, is accused of undermining the democratic process. Is that, if that's not ironic, I don't know what is. So there's our taxpayer dollars at work. Anyway, you know, it's out there. And so obviously the reason I'm sharing it with you, ladies and gentlemen, is this something we got to pay attention to all the time. So if it sounds like it's too good of a deal, you know what? It probably is. And your common sense, your gut will usually protect you. But don't be in a hurry with anything, because there's a lot of scams out there. And if you haven't gotten a copy or seen my book, How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams, worth every dollar of what you could pay to get that by hitting my website, theconfessionofafinancialplanner.com, or just go to davidholland.com. And we'll go... Yeah, let's go a couple seconds early to our break, because when you come back, I have the most amazing thing that you've got to hear about a study recently by the UCLA University. So stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
So totally disgusting. I'm like so sure. It's like barf me out. Ew, gag me with a spoon.
Okay, this one is going to barf you out. Let me tell you. Okay, here, get this. There is a study, and I'm going to try not to laugh my way through this, but it's so ridiculous you have to laugh. A study done by scientists, and I'll use that term as it is, at the University of California, Berkeley, that analyzed a person's rank in society and found that those who were richer were more likely to cheat, lie, and break the law than those who were poorer. So the lead article here is from ABC News, says, are rich people unethical? Now, there's so many things that are ridiculous about this. First of all, the title of the article, it's such a loaded question. Are rich people unethical? Do you still beat your wife? I mean, come on. It's so absurd that today, in where we are as a society, that we're actually asking this question. Can you imagine the outrage? Can you imagine the insanity and the uproar? There'd be rioting if we said this, had this kind of question about any other class, race, aspect of our society. Can you imagine? So this study was done at the UCLA by his name's, where's a guy, Paul Piff. And it was reported in National Academy of Sciences. And basically it says that the people who were had more money were apt to behave more unethically than people with less money. I mean, they did this, a two-part study. One part of the study, they watched people, how they drive, and people with more expensive cars, they assumed had more money, and they were more likely to cut people off and other people in other cars in a San Francisco four-way intersection than people with less expensive cars. Well, maybe the people with more expensive cars were on their way to a job. Maybe they have more horsepower in their car, so they just stepped on it to get through the light. I mean, talk about, you know, circumstantial evidence. Oh, here, this is unbelievable. So what it really comes down to, I'm quoting this guy, Piff, who is the guy behind this study. What it comes down to really is that money creates more of a self-focus, which may account for larger feelings of entitlement. Well, the last time I checked, a lot of the entitlement is not of people who are wealthy. It's of people who aren't necessarily wealthy, maybe people at the other end. And so, get this, we hope, this guy being quoted, we hope further study will show how we can curb these patterns of behavior and that will have an effect on our society. So in other words, how can we neuter these bad behaving rich people? How do we correct that behavior? So we found it's much more prevalent for people in higher ranks of society to see greed and self-interest as good pursuits. Well, self-interest is a human quality that everybody pursues. And so, you know, there's a big difference between being unethical and maybe being greedy or being self-interested. There's just so much bull in this study. I don't even, you know, I was debating when sharing this if I was going to do the gag me intro or the load of bull, because it's both. But the thing that is, it's so absurd. And what I want you to take from my comment today about this is where we're going. Now the folks that are, you know, this battle for who's going to pay taxes and who's responsible for their quote unquote fair share of our what it takes to run our government. Our government is necessary, but what is our government's function and who's going to pay for it? And in what way do we define fairness? Is fairness equal, or is fairness everybody paying the same, or is fairness the person who makes more pays a bigger and bigger and bigger percentage of what they make? Where the top 50% pay 98% of taxes and the bottom 50% pay 2% of income tax. So what I want to caution, and I guess think about this, where are we headed? Where are we headed with this? How's this tie into money? Well, this is all ties into money. So where are we going? What's the solution? One of the things that the guy was trying to figure out is, how do we figure out how to fix this to keep wealthy people from being unethical? Well, I think that there are many in Washington that are already working on that, and it's called higher taxes. They'll take the money away from them. Is this a direction we're going to go, that the government takes away so that they take the money away so we don't act unethically if we make more money? And do rich people have a monopoly on being unethical or behaving badly? Been to some of the parts in our country where lower income or people with less, that where they behave badly or maybe unethically? Are we going to go down this path that, well, wait a minute, what about those smart people? Are they unethical? Or do they act more unethically than people who aren't so smart? And if so, what's the cure for that? You're going to give them a dose of insanity? You're going to give them a drug that'll drop their IQ points by 30 points, bring them back down to whatever level the government deems appropriate and an acceptable risk to society? Where's George Orwell when you need him? Okay, Big Brother is watching, and now they have the study to back it up, courtesy of UCLA, and this utter nonsense. Anyway, there you have it. I'm going to be back to talk about some more financial topics right after this break.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
This is your 2-minute warning.
All right, we're back, and I am going to share with you now five costly retirement surprises. Kiplinger has had a great article on this, and so it sparked me to say, let me talk about some of the things that sometimes people are surprised about when they retire. And I've seen this in working with hundreds of clients in my area, that I've seen people be very surprised in retirement, not only with some of the things that change, some of the things that don't change. Every day is Saturday when you are retired. One of the things you've got to be careful of and not be surprised about is higher spending. There is also very often not a budget item or line item for the amount of travel that people want to do. So I really try to emphasize when I work with people that you need to budget. I'm not going to do your budget for you because I'm not the one following the budget. You're going to do the budget. I'll give you or show you how to get the income that you need. Or let me say it another way. I'll show you how much income you can get from your investments and your retirement assets and make sure you don't run out, both for your lifetime and also the surviving spouse. And then you need to live within that budget. And speaking of surviving spouse, one of the other big issues that people ran into is that this loss of income at the death of one of the spouses. Social Security is going to go, at least for one of the Social Security is going to go away. Then you may lose a pension. You might lose health care. All of those things may conspire to see a 50 or 60 or more percent drop in income at the loss of a spouse. And there's planning that can be done way ahead of time for that. When I work with people, I always insist that I meet with both members of the couple and that we talk through what happens and we build a plan for that. You know, there's this old thought that if somebody dies, you don't do anything for 3 to 6 months to a year. And that rule of thumb is good because it's supposed to help people keep from making quick and maybe wrong decisions. But the cool thing is if you have a plan in place, it's kind of like that glass case on the wall that says, in case of fire, break the glass for the whatever's in there, the fire hose or the axe. Well, you can have the financial plan. In case of, you break the glass and you've already got the plan and you know what to do to replace that income. Healthcare costs are a significant factor for people when they retire. Not only do you have the higher incidence of health needs many times, as we get older, we need more healthcare. The other part, though, are the insurances. Medicare, Part A, you get for free. You've prepaid that with your Medicare tax. But there's Medicare Part B that you have to pay a premium for. And if you make a lot more money, you have to pay a higher premium. And there is also long-term care insurance that you have to be prepared for, or long-term care expenses. I recommend the insurance if it makes sense for your situation. And that depends on how much money you have and your assets. And the other thing that you got to be on guard for is, I mentioned Medicare, Social Security. Because Social Security, you can draw it as early as 62. You can wait till normal retirement age, 65, 66, 67. And if you do take it early, be careful on how much money you make, because if you take it at 62, but you make over $14,600 for 2012, then Social Security is going to take back a dollar for every $2 they give you in Social Security. So it's a pretty high effective tax bracket on you. But also, if you're normal retirement age and you make over $32,000 as a couple, then you could also pay up to 85% in tax of your Social Security will be taxed. So you've got to pay attention to that and plan how you draw your income. Now, speaking of drawing your income, taking money out of your IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, all of those tax sheltered investment accounts, also annuities, you take money out, they hasn't been taxed, then you're going to pay tax on it. You need to be careful how you do that. I'm a strong advocate and often preach about with my clients and people I meet with about how you draw from those retirement accounts is very important. You need to look at your tax bracket. You might want to max out a certain bracket and how much you draw out up to the 10, up to the 15%, up to the 25% bracket. And then you also want to make sure you avoid taking large amounts out, because that can cause more in 1 year. You're better off drawing it out over your lifetime or trying to use it as an income stream as opposed to taking a large chunk out. Hey, I need to buy a car. I need $30,000 for a new car. Well, if you're pulling it from your IRA, you're going to have to take 40 because you got to pay tax on the 40 to net out the 30. So if that's your situation, I definitely would look at alternatives. For example, get a low interest rate loan, or maybe even 0% loan right now. And then you can draw income slowly and it'll keep your taxes lower. All right. That's all the time I have for today. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Be sure to tune in next time. Thank you.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.